Every relationship can use a little help now and then. Open your mind to new paths of communication, understanding, and compassion. Your partner deserves the best, don't they? And you do too.
I hope you still feel small when you stand beside the ocean. Whenever one door closes, I hope one more opens. Promise me that you'll give faith the fighting chance. And when you get the choice to sit it out or dance, I hope you dance.
Join us now for Your Empowered Relationship with Dr. Karen Sherman.
I hope you dance.
How can you not feel like your relationship is in a rut when you've been together so long? Is it really possible to have those good feelings that you experienced in the beginning of your partnership when your life is now full of stress, kids, and, well, life? How can you move out of experiencing a whole lot of negative feelings when things keep coming up from your past? Can you relate to being stuck? Well, you've tuned into the right show. I want to share with you many great tips on how to unstuck your relationship. There are things you can change. As a psychologist for over 25 years, specializing in relationships to yourself and others, and more importantly, through my own personal life experiences, I'll share with you ways to get unstuck. Additionally, I'll be bringing you various experts each week to help you in a variety of areas where you might be stuck. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Sherman, and this is Your Empowered Relationship. Stay tuned to learn the tips, tools, and techniques to a more empowered relationship. Now, we've got a really exciting show today talking about something that I think lots of couples are going to be interested in. But before I tell you about that, I just want to remind you that I think one of the areas that couples get most stuck on is not knowing how to manage their conflicts. And that's a really key skill because we have found that when couples do know how to handle their conflicts, not only do they get along better, but they actually get closer. So I've devised a program that's very, very thorough to help you with that. It drills down real deep, and it covers just a whole bunch of areas. You can find that at fromfighttoforeplay.com, all spelled out, fromfighttoforeplay.com. Now, I've got lots of other tools for you at my regular website, which is drkarensherman.com, drkarensherman.com. There's a free 21-day program to help get your relationship back on track. There's a free monthly newsletter with tips for your empowered living and a whole bunch of other products. So go there now and take a look at that. Okay, I don't want to have to hold on any longer for this exciting topic. So, you know, we talk about relationships and we talk about where do you get stuck and the stress and all that. But one of the vital things for making our relationship so special and helping it to feel satisfying is feeling the affection, feeling the touch. And that's not a topic that we hear too much about. And so I was able to find somebody who's really going to be helping us understand why this is so important and the tools for helping us bring out more of it in our relationship. So let me tell you about today's guest. Michael S. Gelbart is an integrative psychotherapist, a therapeutic movement specialist, and the director of Shift in Perspective. Michael's been a clinical social worker for over 30 years and has facilitated dozens of trainings, seminars, workshops, and groups. His focus in the last several years has been on inner masculine development and on deepening intimacy. He's facilitated workshops on touch talk, the foundations of holistic intimacy, and maturing the sacred masculine. He leads weekly men's groups and co-ed interpersonal awareness groups. Now, Michael's been trained in a whole bunch of therapeutic modalities, includes Hakomi, EMDR, Gestalt, CBT, DBT, mindfulness-based somatic work, and various couple therapies. Now, you may not know that, but I know that stuff. And let me tell you something. This is really, really very impressive different trainings. He's been actively engaged in conscious therapeutic movement practices. He has been trained in various somatic practices, including conscious breath work, yoga, and therapeutic body work. If I've ever got a client, Michael, who's out in California, I'm sending them to you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Karen. Nice to be here.
Yeah, so with a background like that, it's no wonder that you certainly would be the expert on why touch is so important. So let's start with that. You know, so many therapists talk about teaching skills and, you know, learning the right tools. I mean, even in my introduction, I talk about that. But I know, but I want you to talk about, why is touch so important?
Well, we're primarily physical beings, right? We're primarily kinesthetic feeling beings from the womb, from our very first experiences, mm-hmm. before language really comes into play. We're physically based and very sound and vibration oriented. So mm-hmm. touch is very basic and essential. We know that from raising of a child. Children need to be held. Mm-hmm. And receive that kind of holding to different degrees, right? Depending on the culture, depending on the parenting philosophies of the time. So touch is very essential and basic. And we all have a different kind of, as adults, relationship with touch, depending on our histories. If we've been given a lot of secure holding, then we're most likely comfortable with touch and different kinds of levels of physical contact and intimacy. And some of us, if there's been trauma in our background, are not as comfortable with touch, or maybe more pushing that away or keeping up boundaries. A touch is oftentimes sexualized. So if that's been the case, certainly if there's been a physical sexual abuse for someone, then there can be anxiety and distrust of touch. So we all have a different relationship with and comfort level with different kinds of physical contact.
Right. Okay, I want to go back a little bit. I want to go back to basics for a second. You know, skin is basically an organ, right?
Again, please?
The skin, our skin, is an organ.
Yes.
And it covers so much of, it covers our entire body. And I remember when I was teaching that there was a study that was done with rhesus monkeys where and maybe you know the study also, where they took baby monkeys away from their mothers and they mm-hmm. created two surrogate monkeys out of wire. But with one surrogate mother, they just put in a bottle so that the surrogate could feed the baby. And in the other surrogate mother, there was no bottle, but they covered the wire with soft cloth. And then they put the baby monkeys into some kind of an anxiety situation. And what they found was that the baby monkeys went to the surrogates that had the cloth on them, not the ones with the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And at that
mm-hmm.
point, what they realized was the need for contact comfort. And what we realize is how important touch is, that not only, you know, that's even more vital than feeding, I would guess, because they didn't go to the surrogates with the bottle. And as you so, you know, quickly and succinctly pointed out, that if in the early years there are different experiences with touch,
mm-hmm.
that's going to carry over into our adult years.
Right. Well, the classic book in the field is Ashley Montague's book called Touching, mm-hmm. or called Touch. And that's, if someone really wants to explore the physiological and cultural and biological aspects of touch, that would be what I would recommend. And there is that, I would say there's a continuum of touch needs, from soft animal needs to hard animal needs. So the soft animal needs are more contact, affection, holding mm-hmm. hands, being having your shoulder squeezed, hugging, cuddling, having someone put their hands on your back for a moment. That can be so settling or so unsettling. But for people to have that kind of soft or contact needs, kind of like having a pet. Now, my wisdom guide these days is my cat Scooter. He's just so chill. He's like my Yoda. I think I might re-nickname him Yoda. He's just so present and so available to contact, right? Just being petted and he's purring. And his presence is really, a lesson for us human beings that can get so caught up in busyness and task lists and things that we have to do in productivity that we can neglect those very basic needs to be touched, to be held, to be soothed. A touch can be very, very soothing and calming. It lets you know that someone's there.
Right, right. So when you talk about a... I'm sorry, Michael, go ahead.
I would say that, again, the continuum of contact, the range of contact goes from the softer animal needs, you're holding hands, putting one's hand on somebody's back, reaching over and squeezing somebody's shoulders. It's like there's no better way, no more direct way to communicate to somebody that you care,
right
through our hands. Our hands are such beautiful instruments,
mm-hmm.
really, mm-hmm. And so just reaching over and knowing, well, there's a whole different conversation around approach and knowing if somebody wants that kind of touch, if they don't want that kind of touch, there's a whole boundary there that we're crossing between our own skin boundaries and somebody else's skin boundaries. And there's a whole language and conversation there that goes on, non-verbally and verbally, around making that contact and knowing that that contact is wanted. So we can move forward to that, but beneath that is just that how directly we communicate our caring through our hands, through reaching across space and connecting and making a contact with someone else.
Would you say that under the category of affection, that affection pretty much takes in those soft touches that you were talking about? Or is
it's like petting my cat.
Right.
It's like petting our pets.
Right.
So we call it petting, right?
Right.
It's petting. It's just letting someone know I really care about you on that very basic level. Now we get into sexuality, and that we're looking at more towards hard animal needs. We're looking at arousal. Touch
mm-hmm.
can be arousing depending on who and depending on where and depending on what the context is,
mm-hmm.
That moves towards arousal, it moves towards, that can be a foreplay, certainly for couples. Touch has very different meanings, what kind of touch is being brought in, if it's just for affection, or if there's more of a sexual desire in one or the other or both partners, then touch can have very different meanings, right? Can become foreplay, can become energy play, can become erotic energy, and can be moving towards genital contact and a wide range of sexual experiences. So that's what I call the range of contact, right?
Right.
Continuum of contact can go from just real basic affection, kindness, sweet, innocent, I really like you, playful contact,
mm-hmm.
into a crossing a barrier into more of a that can be more physiologically or sexually arousing, moving more towards a sexuality kind of exchange.
Okay, so let's start with something, because I'm thinking of a particular couple. Because as you had said in the beginning, depending on your culture, there are going to be different kinds of touching or different, ways of holding. There are certain cultures who are not very expressive in their display of affection. So if one person in the couple does want affection and the other one is not comfortable expressing it, they're stuck. How would you work with that?
I have a couple that I've been seeing, and she has some, I would say, simply put, to answer your question, I would say if that couple can have a conversation about what touch has been like in their history, in their families,
mm-hmm.
in their culture, that can be a really wonderful exploration that can shed a lot of light on where they are with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So in the couple I'm thinking of, her family doesn't do affection, doesn't do physical touch.
Right.
They don't hold each other. There isn't that kind of crossing over the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
So she comes in a relationship with a man who is very touch-oriented, very affectionate, very physical,
mm-hmm.
really needs that kind of needs that physical contact.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a clash around that.
Right.
So what I've done with them is really exploring with her what her barriers to touch are, how unfamiliar it is to her,
mm-hmm.
what the discomfort is of that. An inquiry can be very powerful. If he can be, when we can get him quiet enough to really listen, not take it personal, then we can really learn about what the culture of of touches for her. And furthermore, she had, this particular client had, had sexual abuse in her history. Mm. So you have this whole range then of trauma that's related to touch, where touch has been abused by a parent or a significant authority person, mm-hmm. where touch has been used against them. And so you've got that whole layering then that needs to be really reprocessed. I use EMDR, the eye movement technique,
right.
to help people to reprocess their traumas around touch. Right.
Right.
And so that dialogue can open to really look at what touch means to each of us. That's the language of touch. What different kinds of touch means. Too much pressure, too little pressure. I don't like the way you're scratching me, my back, right? I really need to be held, approached more softly. Like if you come towards me from the back of me and squeeze my butt, that doesn't really work for me.
Right.
But if you move sideways to me and you kind of just slowly kind of put your arm around me and give my shoulders a squeeze, I relax. So
right.
call that the language of touch. It's having a conversation about what kind of touch feels good, what kind of touch does not feel good, what kind of approach feels right, what kind of approach doesn't feel right. That can be such an intimate conversation, right?
I was just thinking that.
For a couple to have.
I was just thinking that, you know, as I'm listening to you, it's like, well, yes, of course you have this conversation. But on the other hand, if certain kinds of touch make you uncomfortable, it would seem to me that it would also be very difficult to have this conversation. Because that whole subject, whether it be the physicality of it or the verbalization of it, would be very difficult to have, or do.
Right. So that's right. So the defensiveness that can arise in just a moment, all of a sudden the opportunity for that conversation has been lost. And that's pretty sad. So there's lots of conversations couples are not having because they're difficult conversations and they're difficult to approach.
Right.
So the communication piece around that is around setting up, I call it setting the table, where you approach having a conversation. Hey, I'd really love to talk about our relationship to touch. Can we have that conversation sometime? Maybe we can have a walk or over dinner. Are you willing to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And the partner gets to say, no, or what do you mean? Or, sure, you know, so setting that conversational tone is so important
mm-hmm.
to be able to do a real inquiry into that, not
mm-hmm.
from a manipulation place. I want to change your mind, but I really want to understand where you're coming from on this. What's so difficult for you?
Okay, I'm really going to, you know, put you into a tough spot here because, again, I'm thinking of a particular couple. She does not have any abuse like the person you're speaking about. It is just purely the background that she grew up with is cultural. And her husband understands that. And so
mm-hmm.
he approaches her and he says, you know, this is something I really need.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that it's your background. And she says, well, but I just feel silly and I'm uncomfortable. And she doesn't do it well because she is so awkward at it.
Mm-hmm.
So they both understand the reason that it happens. And yet she's just so unbelievably uncomfortable that she really, you know, doesn't want to try it. Or when she tries it, she's so awkward at it that it doesn't go anywhere.
When she tries to have the conversation or when she tries to have
touch? Both.
Well, so, I mean, with her, I'd be wanting to find ways of soothing. Like, what's soothing for her? If not
mm-hmm.
touch, what is soothing?
Mm-hmm.
What's the degree, you know, maybe it's sense, maybe it's something auditory in the environment. What kinds of soothing, what kind of ways does she have for soothing? That's first of all, for her nervous system is, it sounds like, is relatively high strung and perhaps with some anxiety in her system. And so I'd want to help her find ways to really more deeply soothe and nourish and relax her nervous system, first
mm-hmm.
of all,
mm-hmm.
so that she can even approach a conversation, second of all. And so
mm-hmm.
one thing, you know, you might explore is proximity and distance. So how much proximity, where is the proximity safe? Like if she had to put him in the room somewhere with her, how close would be close enough? How close would be, how distant would be too distant?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay. To find that comfort level of proximity, and then begin to have her explore a little bit closer and a little bit of discomfort. So
mm-hmm.
How she is able to navigate her discomfort or tolerate a little bit more discomfort, like to be a little more, to be willing to be a little more at the edge of that unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And not too much that she can't metabolize it, but
right.
not complacent about it either. Like there's an avoidance piece in there for her
mm-hmm.
that I would want to really suss out.
Right. And with him, meanwhile, complimenting her or reinforcing her and telling her this feels good or this is really nice or I thank you so much for doing this, so that she, again, starts to feel more and more comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, in empathy with him for the moment, I mean, I think some men in this client I'm talking about, the one you're talking about also, there's a whole lot of holding and containing that's being asked of these men.
Mm-hmm.
You
yes.
know, both of their soft animal needs, their affection needs or holding mm-hmm. needs, and also mm-hmm. their sexual needs.
Yeah.
And so how these men are able to hold on to themselves in that and keep their own calm in their nervous system is really key. Like John Gottman's work
mm-hmm.
really emphasizes
yeah.
the importance of men being able to calm their physiological arousal. And if they get too aroused, obviously if they go into anger or aggression, that just gives the woman, see, I can't trust that. You see,
right,
that,
right.
I can't be close with you.
Right.
But at the same time, there's going to be, you know, these guys are going to have these needs and if their partner is not willing to approach them or to be responsive to their needs, they've got a very legitimate, challenge there.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there needs to be empathy for them as well. I mean, the empathy needs to be going both ways.
Yes,
It scares her, makes her uncomfortable. What is it that scares her and makes her uncomfortable? Is she willing to explore that?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right,
oh.
And at the same time, is she willing to stay relational with him?
Right. Okay. So getting off of your couple and the couple I'm speaking about,
mm-hmm.
in general, what are some of the other points about, you know, starting to understand each other in terms of touch and affection?
Mm-hmm. Well, say that, again, I would come back to being exploratory, being curious,
mm-hmm.
being playful, like being present. When touch is really in that realm of an exploration, a sensory exploration into our own bodies, of our own sensations, and of our skin, of our internal relaxation and tension systems. When it's an exploration, it can be a fascinating journey. And
mm-hmm.
if it's play, if it's more in the realm of play, then it's a very different model than performance oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people can get caught up in, I have to do this, or I should be doing this, or it's a performance, or it's goal oriented. And it's just on the task list, okay, make love to my husband. It's on the task list versus this is something I really want to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that mode is really important to be open and curious about what does a particular kind of touch do? Like in Hakomi, which is a body-centered psychotherapy, we set up mindfulness, just basically setting up an awareness, and then offering little experiments. So a couple can do this where they just both kind of take a moment to get quiet, and then a certain kind of touch is offered.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's even just a reaching out for touch,
mm-hmm.
or an offering of a hug, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just those gestures, simple gestures,
bids. I love what you said, Michael, about shifting the mind to an exploratory or playful attitude rather than performance-based, because I think that once, as you said, it goes towards that on both the male and the female, and maybe I'm going to even go with especially the male, it makes it just changes the whole agenda, and I think dooms it very often for failure, and takes away the true intimacy of it, or certainly interferes with what could be a much more intimate experience. If you do it
right.
In the
once
manner
it's,
which
once
you're...
it's agendized, turned into an agenda,
yeah.
Then there's a goal and there can be felt then a kind of manipulation. I think of touch as something that we offer.
Mm-hmm.
It's an offering.
Right.
You know, it's an invitation, like a hug. I mean, someone offers you a hug and they just open their arms and they offer, you get to have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And in some families, if you know, give me a kiss goodnight wasn't allowed to be, no, I don't really want to, then there can be a sense of coercion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And coercive touch, nobody wants.
Right.
So if it's held, if touch is offered, it's an invitation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't usually get turned down when I'm offering somebody a hug. Now, if they do, it's like beautiful. I don't want them to hug me because they have to.
Right, right.
So if we kind of put touch in the realm of, it's really an invitation, it's really a welcome, it's an offering. And the other person can say, no, not quite that, not that, how about this? And like there's a negotiation, like there's cuddle parties. You've heard of these cuddle parties?
No, I haven't.
We're out in California, you know. Cuddle parties are these actual parties where it's just a bunch of people are gathered. It's not sexual. And people are invited to have touch with each other and to define their boundaries. Here's my limits. I don't want genital contact, or I don't want my breast to be touched. But other places in my body, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or that doesn't feel good, and this does feel good. It's really allowing ourselves. There's much more room and versatility and subtlety in mm-hmm. what's possible in touch than we might imagine. Not black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Like touch me or don't touch me. It's more like, I like to be touched this way and not that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's possible there when we actually communicate about it is much more differentiated kind of touch.
Hmm. Well, as you said, you're out in California. It hasn't hit the East Coast yet.
Well, maybe you want to throw some cuddle parties, Karen. Look it up online. It's actually a kind of a neat thing. It's non-sexual. It's totally consensual. And it's mm-hmm. more about, let's be able to have some touch. It's so nourishing. For me, like I'm a dancer, and I have so much dance community in California. I feel very fortunate. And one of the dance forms I practice is called contact improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
And I can go into a jam, there'll be 20, 30, 40 people, and we're all just basically exchanging different levels of contact.
Hmm.
And it's sharing weight, giving and receiving weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's back to back. I suggest with my couples, I suggest to the couples listening here, back to back. Go back to back with each other, sitting, lying, standing. Have your backs up against each other, because what that does is, like, I've got your back.
Uh-huh.
There's no better way to communicate I've got your back than physical contact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm right here, right behind you.
Yeah.
And then you make your adjustments so you're not you're sensitive to how you're not pushing into them too hard, you're not giving them more of their weight than they can bear, but it's surprising, actually, how much weight we can actually bear. Like, I love to have my body laid on top of, or to put my body on top. In this contact improv, we roll on each other. It's gymnastic. It's
uh-huh.
there's lifts, and,
uh-huh.
and so it feels really good to have somebody's weight on top of you. They know where they're putting their weight, not like they're
right.
dead weight,
right?
But they're
right.
consciously putting weight. Our hamstrings can stand a lot of weight.
Yeah.
So using each other as props, like, okay, you be my pillow, or I'll be your pillow.
Right.
And you can just put your weight on me however you need to, however it's comfortable for you. So there's kind of a playfulness to that I think is priceless. It's really just learning, it's just being in a body. It's not sexual. It's not about some kind of manipulation. It's really about exchanging, connecting one nervous system to another, one body with another.
Yes, and as I'm visualizing it, I can see the absolute benefit for it. And if people could get out of their minds the idea that it's either we're not having any physical contact or we're having sex, and just understand that there's this whole other arena, it really would be a marvelous way to connect with each other and start to feel much more comfortable with each other.
Right. Couples can take a massage therapy course together, and they can learn different kinds of touch and exchange massages. So there's a whole range, exactly, Karen, that's possible.
Yeah, I love it. I really love it. You know, often I tell couples about ways that they can have date nights, and I've never had that one. I'm going to throw that into the mix now. I really love it.
It's very nourishing. I think for when you can find the way into your own touch needs, and know what it is that you need, and be able to ask for it. That's empowering.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it really lends itself to just feeling more comfortable with each other, and adding a whole new dimension to the relationship. I really love it very much.
Karen, I have a question for you.
Yeah, we're going to have to end it very soon. So,
okay, quick question.
Ask me the question.
So many couples come up with that she doesn't want to tell them what it is that she doesn't want to ask. She doesn't want to tell them what it is that she needs. He should know already.
Well,
how do you respond to that?
Well, number one, don't expect your mate to be your mind reader. That's unfair. And if you ask and he is willing to give it to you, then that counts because he cares enough to give you what you want. But I will add one more dimension to it, which is that I think, you know, we have research that men are much more sensitive than women are. And I think that a lot of times women end up not saying what they want because they're afraid that they will upset the male. And that, I think, leads to a lot of miscommunications or not being as open as you can be. That may happen.
But men are more sensitive to women in the sense of being asked for something?
No. More sensitive physiologically. And so if they feel they're not doing something right or they're coming across as being inadequate, they either shut down or they bark. So I think a lot of women hesitate to, you know, make certain commentary because of the reaction they're going to get.
Performance-based sensitivity, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Michael, we do have to end this. How can people be back in touch with you?
My website's intimacyperspectives.com.
Okay.
And I'm in California, 510-357-2527 is my number. I do Skype sessions and online sessions and as well as in person. And, my website has some blogs and some writings that I've done as well.
Terrific.
Thank you, Karen. It's been a great conversation. I really enjoyed this.
Yes, very much. And everybody, you know that what I always say, I hope that you remember that if you want to move out of an emotionally frozen life to an enriched, chosen life, then trust yourself to come from a place of love rather than fear so that you can connect more in all of your relationships. This is Dr. Karen. I'll see you next time.